The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 166.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Hi, guys. How is everyone doing? I am right here in Phoenix. I got done watching the fight. Tyson looked good. I don't know if you saw that fight. I tell you what, for a 54-year-old man, he looked good. He looked good. It was entertaining for sure. I had a bunch of people over at my place, and we had some beers and some barbecue and a little tequila here and there and watching the fights. It was definitely a good time. So now let's dive into what you guys are here for, and that's for me to answer some of your questions. I'm super, super stoked to dive in. If you guys have not yet, you got to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. There you go. That's my investment website. And Gene, my marketing guy, has a deal going where you can try it out for $1. That's the investment site that I have that I do with Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh, where we talk about how you can build wealth and thrive in a world of out of control central banks and big governments. So check that out at georgegammon.com/pro. All right, cool. Let's get into some questions. My energy stocks are performing well. I'm happy, but at a loss. Why are they performing well? Well, I mean, most likely because you got inflation expectations. Now, whether that will pan out or not, I'm not sure. There's you got more buyers than sellers, Cody. But you want to, yeah, too bad. I bought a lot in March when they were super, super cheap. But that's why you try to buy stuff that's cheap and stuff where you're going to have, where it gets under the cost of construction. I'm a real estate guy, so I said that. But under the cost of production, because sooner or later, you've got the destroyed supply. And the supply catches up with the lack of demand. And at some point, the prices turn in a commodity such as energy. So if banks can lend money out of thin air and the loans default, how is this bad for the banks? Well, because they'll be insolvent. They won't be able to. So what happens is the loan is an asset on the bank's balance sheet. So if you've got, let's say, $100 in assets and $100 in liabilities, and your assets aren't assets anymore because they're not paying the loan, all of a sudden you're bankrupt, you're insolvent. So banks definitely need people to pay back the loans, unless the Fed just bails them out and they can sell their assets to the Fed for 100 cents on the dollar. That's the only way they can get out of that. But yeah, you're thinking as though the banks can just create their own money, and that they do. But they can't really create money for themselves. It gets a little tricky there. I'd need a whiteboard to show you. But yeah, they can't just wave a magic wand and create, because all they create, if you think about it, is a liability. They create a deposit that's a liability for themselves. So they're not really creating something that they can spend into the economy. You can spend it, but they can't. Am I an advocate for firearms? I don't know if I'm an advocate. I mean, I think I'm all about the Second Amendment for sure. I think that you should be free to keep a firearm in your home. If I had a wife and kids, I definitely would. For sure, for sure, for sure. But you got to be very careful about the laws in your state nowadays and in your city. And you know, go back to that video, that interview I did with my buddy Robert Barnes, the lawyer. And he paints a very clear picture that nowadays, even if the laws favor people who protect their homes with a gun, sometimes if that's not the way the political narrative is flowing in your local area, even if the law protects you, you might still be prosecuted. And so my point is, listen to that video that I did with Robert, and definitely be careful there. But yeah, I think that's one of the great things about the United States is the Second Amendment. Do I believe that capitalism will get the blame for the inevitable hyperinflation, civil war, endgame, rising to socialism? Most likely. That's a great point. And I believe that Mises, was it Mises or maybe Murray Rothbard? One of those guys in the Austrian camp, that's the conclusion his belief is that if you take fractional reserve banking to its logical conclusion, you end up with socialism. I think it was Mises who had that idea. But you just look at maybe even democracy, you could argue that you end up there, and it's kind of like cyclical. So all democracy is, like my buddy Rick Rule says all the time, is it's three wolves and a sheep trying to decide what's for lunch. And if the wolves are socialists, then there you go. What do I think about crypto other than Bitcoin? Are you researching the topics? Not really. I think Bitcoin has a big advantage because of the network effect. And I'm fine just owning a little bit of that. I'm very open to all other cryptos. I think they're very interesting and I'd love to find out more about them. But from an investment standpoint, I'm not really getting into them too much. Although I will say that for a video that I'm going to try to do this next week, I threw out some tweets, and if you guys follow me on Twitter, I'm sure you saw the tweet storm. It was like, you know, the people who are really into Bitcoin, they're just as, well, I shouldn't say that, they're almost as religious about Bitcoin as the socialists that I dealt with in Puerto Rico. It's not an asset for them. It's their God. And I've really been putting a lot of thought into, let me be clear, it's not just Bitcoiners who get like that. And I'm very bullish on Bitcoin, but I'm not emotionally invested in it. That's the big difference. And you see this in gold as well. I don't want to isolate Bitcoiners. You see this in people who own Tesla stock. You see this in politics, especially, where it's no longer about politics. That's their religion. They pray to the church of fill in the blank. You know, Democrats, Republicans, Bitcoin, gold, Tesla, whatever. And so I was reading a couple articles today that were very thought-provoking. And the argument was because in the West, we've moved further and further away from religion as, kind of the focal point of our belief system. And I'm not going to say that's good or bad or whatever. I'm not here to debate that. But we do need meaning in our lives as human beings. So his hypothesis, this author, excuse me, was because we've moved further and further and further away from religion, as human beings, we need something to fill that gap. We need something to be the meaning in our lives. And his idea is that's why people have filled that void with things like Tesla. And I would argue that that's why they've filled that void with politics. I can definitely, you should see my Twitter feed and you'll find out that a lot of people have filled that void with Bitcoin. For sure. And that's where it starts to get dangerous. As an investor, if you become that emotionally attached or that emotionally invested in your portfolio or what you hold in your portfolio, I think that's when you need to look in the mirror and say, wait a minute here. I need to reevaluate not what's in your portfolio, but how I'm viewing what's in my portfolio. You look at the greatest investors of all time, and they were very methodical. They weren't emotional. They were agnostic. They didn't care what they'd buy. Could care less. They're just buying what they think is going to be the best investment long term. Again, agnostic. And then I think what we should all be contemplating as investors who are bullish or bearish or whatever, things like gold or things like Bitcoin. And again, I'm very bullish on gold, and I'm bullish long term. I'm bullish on Bitcoin. But I think as investors, we need to ask ourselves, okay, if this is a religion, is that bullish or bearish? As I was thinking about this today, it's I think there's a great argument for it being bearish, but I think there's a good argument for it being bullish. Because who's gonna sell their religion? Let's look at Islam. Let's look at Christianity. Are people gonna sell that? No, because it's their whole belief system. The amount of cognitive dissonance that is required, or the amount of cognitive dissonance that would come as a result of your entire belief system being shattered. I think people would far rather lose money than go through the pain, the emotional trauma of the cognitive dissonance. It's a very, very powerful psychological phenomenon, cognitive dissonance. So you just touched on that point, and I wanted to kind of go off on a tangent there briefly, because I think it's very, very important in today's day and age, as people try to find religion in something, that as smart, prudent investors, we're asking ourselves how that affects certain assets that we may have in our portfolio. Question, why are you so bullish on real estate in Dubai? Well, I am as an idea. Let's be clear. I've been to Dubai, but I haven't been there in this last this year. And I haven't been there like I planned to for a couple months to really take a deep dive into the real estate market to determine whether or not it's something I want to, or it's a place where I want to invest my own money. That's yet to be determined. I would never, I would never go through that process without physically going there and doing the boots on the ground research that I like to do. But why do I like it just at surf? Why do I like the idea? Because it's cheap. I think you probably guessed that I was going to say that. I like real estate when you can buy it under the cost of construction, and you can do that right now in Dubai. Especially right now, I think it's a unique opportunity in Dubai because you can buy under the cost of construction in landmark buildings. Like I was doing some back of the napkin math, and I think that you could even buy under the cost of construction in a building like the Burj Khalifa, which is the tallest building in the world. I mean, it's in movies. You saw it in the Mission Impossible movie. So I think that's a pretty rare thing. And then, of course, the RV ratio that I always talk about in my videos, so that the rent to value or rent to cost basis that you're able to collect. And then I think in that area, long term, 10 years, 20 years, I'm bullish because for a lot of the reasons that Chris McIntosh talks about in Rebel Capitalist Pro. And that's, you have to look around the world right now and try to figure out what countries are going to give the middle finger to Klaus and Bigglesworth. If you look at the Great Reset agenda, that does not favor all countries equally. If you're Saudi Arabia, you're not a big fan of the Great Reset. You're probably less of a fan of Klaus and Bigglesworth than the folks that watch my channel, me included. So there are some countries that, Chris studies this far more extensively than I do, that are basically just going to look the other way and they're not going to play ball. And so those are the countries where I would, for the macro reason, I'd start to kind of kick tires. Not that I'd be very bullish on every country that most likely will give Klaus the middle finger, but that's where it kind of piques my interest. So that the Middle East would fall into that category. Like Russia would fall into that category. Brazil might fall into that category. And I think that Eastern Europe will also fall into that category because of their recent go around with socialism. And there's a lot of people that live in that part of the world that were alive and lived through the horrors of socialism. And I would be shocked if they welcomed that again with open arms. I think about the people that work for me right now in Colombia. Many of them, as most of you guys know, are Venezuelan. And the reason they're in Colombia, in Medellin, is because they fled Venezuela. they fled the socialism. They fled the hyperinflation. And if you should talk to some, I should do an interview sometime with some of my Venezuelan employees who actually lived through this last, Chavez and Maduro. And you want to see some people that get pissed. I mean, I'm not talking about they want nothing to do with socialism. They get pissed. Like some of them, especially when I first started the YouTube channel, and they're, I'd only get a couple views or a few comments on my videos. A lot of my employees would read the comments. Now I just get too many of them, but they get pissed. And if I had like someone that was talking as though socialism could be a good thing, like a gringo, that would really get them upset. Like you could see them getting frustrated with that. And so anyway, you get my point. And that there's a lot of those people that are currently in Eastern Europe. So that's why I kind of, those areas are piquing my interest right now.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Question. Aloha. All right. Someone from Hawaii, most likely. After inflation and bubble bursts in Japan, real estate market prices deflated and stay low for many decades, and economy gone into a coma. Guess we have the same case globally. Yeah, you definitely argue for that. I know Snyder would argue for that. Dr. Lacey Hunt would most likely argue that that's what's going on. That's the future. If the system stays as is, the system here in the United States, I think that's the natural path. I would definitely be in the deflation camp for sure. Just the reason I lean more towards the stagflation is because I think they'll change the system. And that's really the only difference between people like Grohman and Lynn and Brent Johnson and Steve the Bond King, if you want to use those four as an example. They really don't, they agree on everything. They just think that one group thinks the system will stay as is, or one group is just in the deflation camp until they see things change. And then the other group is just, they're like, listen, the Fed changed everything back in March. The Federal Reserve Act is no longer applicable to anything because they just basically threw it right out the window, and they showed us their true colors, and that is that they don't care about the law. We are no longer a country of law. We're a country of men, the opposite. And so that, and I would be in that camp. I think you look at just them ignoring the Federal Reserve Act, and no one batted an eye. No one called them out on it except for me and a few, like, you know, Schiff and guys in our gals in our space and FinTwit. But you hear CNBC call them out? Did you see anyone on CNBC or Bloomberg say, hey, wait a minute, what the Fed is doing is totally illegal? No, I heard Gundlach call them out, but not on CNBC. So if no one's calling them out on it and they're just getting away with it, why won't they continue to do it? They'll just ignore it. So that's why I think there's been that paradigm shift that maybe some people are waiting for. That's why I would be of the opinion that the paradigm shift has already happened. Gary asked a question. Who am I to believe Harry Dent or most other economists? Hardcore deflation on the way or no? Gold, going down for the count. I own gold as an insurance policy, so I don't really care what the price does. I think that's a prudent way to look at it, or obviously I would do something different. But even in deflation, I mean, the price goes down, but does your purchasing power? So let's say that you buy gold, at $2,000 an ounce, and the price goes down to $1,000. But the price of goods and services goes down by 75%. Okay. The value of your gold in terms of what it can buy increased, although we had deflation. So I don't know that it's just as simple as the price of gold goes down bad, the price of gold goes up good. Depends what's going on with the prices of the things that you would want to buy with gold. So I think that's where you kind of have to look at it. And if you look at it in those terms, I like gold in inflation. I like gold in deflation. That's one of the main reasons why I consider it to be insurance. All right, so could you give an update on Bitcoin? That's my update that I did. That's probably the best way. That's how I'm thinking about Bitcoin. And then to be clear, I'm trying to combine the psychological component to how it would work as a global currency, how it would work as a digital gold that other countries would use to back their own currency if there was a complete loss in the confidence in fiat itself. And then taking it a step further and trying to figure out how that works with an asset that has a fixed number of units. And of course, all the cult of Bitcoin, I'll call them, comes in and says, oh, George, you idiot. You don't know what you're talking about. Bitcoin is infinitely divisible. Oh, it's infinitely divisible. I get it. I get it, Bitcoiners. Trust me, I get it. I'm not that stupid. But so is the dollar. And so you start to dive down that rabbit hole. And you think to yourself, okay, well, if the dollar is, we have quarters, we have nickels, we have pennies. If that's divisible, then why did we start to create more dollars? Is it just because we could, and you couldn't do that with Bitcoin? Or is it something else? And at face value, I mean, again, the cult of Bitcoin comes in and they immediately say, well, that's different than the dollar, because the dollar, you can create an infinite amount of them. And Bitcoin, you have a limited supply. Therefore, you can't compare the two when you're talking about it being divisible. But that doesn't answer the question, because there's still the question of, well, why didn't they divide it? Why did they create more? And is it just because they could, or is it something else? And my point is, it's something else. When you really start to think it through, and you got to look at it, you got to look at Bretton Woods, you've got to look at the Euro dollar system that was created as a result of Bretton Woods, more specifically a result of the dollar being the global reserve currency and the United States not being able to run a large enough trade deficit, in other words, hollow out their manufacturing base fast enough to give the world the amount of dollars required to facilitate what they believed to be maximum GDP growth per country. So anyway, but and then I'm trying to combine that with the psychological component of Bitcoin. And then of course, I'm going way deeper than that too, because I'm trying to figure out how it would work with a banking system if you were lending Bitcoin in a way that was fully reserve, or do you use fractional reserve, or do you go back to free banking? Now, if you don't know what free banking is, you should. So as soon as we get done with this video, check out free banking. And that's basically where you have the banks issuing currency. That's another thing that most people don't realize is we think that under the gold standard, you know, let's look at the United States in the late 1800s, that the money supply was fixed. It wasn't. Base money was, but broad money wasn't. The banks could still, we still have fractional reserve banking, right? So M2 could still go up if banks were doing loans with fractional reserve, right? So it's my point, I think, is that it's a very complex question with a lot of different rabbit holes, but I think it's a very, very important question. And that's why I'm trying to figure it out in my own head. And when I do that, that's the next step is always a whiteboard video. But also too, for those of you who follow me on Bitcoin, or excuse me, who follow me on Twitter, and a lot of the Bitcoin community, let's say, cult of Bitcoin, doesn't understand this. When I ask a question on Twitter, very rarely am I trying to get the answer to the question I'm asking. Usually what I'm doing is I'm trying to answer questions that I know no one can answer, or maybe a handful of people on the planet could answer. And they're not hanging out on Twitter, the people that could answer the questions. So I'm trying to put these pieces of the puzzle together by asking questions that I know people can answer, seeing the responses, and then with the responses, maybe that triggers something else in my head, and then it allows me to put another piece of the puzzle together to answer the question that I'm really asking in my own mind that I know no one can answer. You see, so just keep that in mind when you're seeing me tweet out a bunch of questions. It's don't take it face value, I guess. All right, forgive my tangent there, guys. Let me get back to why you guys are here, and let's get some of your questions answered. What would happen to countries like Mexico, Peru, huge silver reserves, if they backed their currency in silver? I don't know what would happen to the country. I think that would be great if they did that. I think it would attract a significant amount of foreign direct investment. But you'd have to combine that with other things. Just gold and Bitcoin, again, although I'm bullish on both long term, I'd see them as completely different asset classes. But they're not a panacea. And I think a lot of the gold guys and a lot of the Bitcoin guys, they see it as a panacea, again, like a religion. And it's not. It's not. It cannot solve all problems. And it cannot solve all your financial problems. Because I'll tell you one thing that's a lot more important than gold or Bitcoin. That's a passport. You can have all the Bitcoin in the world. And if you're stuck in Venezuela and you can't get out, that Bitcoin or that gold doesn't do you much good. It's, see, people forget that the wealth is not the gold. The wealth is not the Bitcoin. The wealth is goods and services. That's the wealth of an economy or a society. It's the productivity and the goods and services it can create. You see, I always use the example that Schiff gives because it's perfect. You're stranded on an island and the only thing around you are a couple of coconuts and some sand, but yet you got your thumb drive, or you got your chest full of gold, you got your $1 billion. Are you rich or are you poor? So I think that it's very important to see that. And my point with your question, Rigo, is that you can't just say, okay, we backed our currency with gold or silver. Great. We're going to have all these investors come flocking in. No, what is the business environment like? What are the regulations? I mean, look at Ecuador. Ecuador is a great example of that. They dollarized, which sure, that's attractive for a lot of investors because you don't have to worry about the government printing, infinity money. You don't have to worry about it turning into a Venezuela in that aspect. But then if you just increase regulations to the point where you don't want or where businesses don't want to come in, then what's the point? Right? It's the country would have to do a lot of things, not just that. But I do like that. I'm definitely a proponent of that, for sure. Do I think it's possible for precious metals to be manipulated? Yeah, for sure. And I think to a certain degree, I mean, I think at the end of the day, the market is going to call the shots. But I think it's a lot of stuff is manipulated. How difficult is it to get a tea time in Medellin? Not that tough. I'm a member at one of the country clubs there. Great course. Proper 18 holes. I think it's 6,700 yards or something like that. So it's a full-size course. It's not like a pitch and putt thing. And they've got horseback riding. They've got archery. They've got an Olympic-sized pool. They've got clay tennis courts. They've got normal. I mean, it's a full-on awesome country club. I know Saturdays mornings it's tough to get a tea time, but outside of that, it's super easy. Deflation, inflation. We should have both in a free market. Both should be free to find market prices, costs, wages up, down, prices do the same. Yeah, exactly. John, I think there should be a free market for everything. We should not have government intrusion. It shouldn't be illegal for two people to come to an agreement as to what A wants to provide and what B wants to provide that person for their productivity. It's anything that you, any type of involvement is going to distort a free market. And that includes just wages. In fact, that's one reason why deflation really wasn't a big deal. And it was actually very beneficial, I would argue, on net balance, is because wages would go down, yes, but the price of goods and services would go down faster. And if you look at deflation, actually wages went up in nominal terms in the late 1800s. Ron's asking if I'm in Medellin. No, Ron, I'm in Phoenix right now. Enjoy it. I hope you love it, buddy. Make sure you check out Parqueiras. If you want a hotel recommendation, I would stay at the Click Clack Hotel right there in Provenza. You'd love it. Trust me, you'd love it. I would say Click Clack or the Charlie. I work out at the Charlie at the gym there on the 14th floor. It overlooks the city. Gorgeous, gorgeous gym. So if you stay at the Click Clack, just walk over to the Charlie if you want to get your morning workout in. Trust me, you'll be glad you did. It's got a gorgeous view of the city, but stay at Click Clack. You're in the, if you're looking for a hotel recommendation, and then you'll just an FYI, that's right where all my investment properties are. Right around Click Clack, right around Parqueiras, the Golden Mile there. You'll see walking up and down the streets kind of the area where I like to invest, if you're interested. Who manages my properties? Well, I've got Angie and Joaquin. They manage my whole real estate team in Medellin. So if you're referring to Medellin specifically, that would be Angie. If you guys want to contact Angie for whatever reason, or Joaquin about properties or anything, yeah, feel free. Just email my assistant at contact@georgegammon.com and just ask for Angie or Joaquin's number, and they'll give it to you. You can just WhatsApp them and tell them that you're, you know, you watch my YouTube channel, and they'll answer any question you have. They both speak English.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
How should I position myself for the Great Reset? Well, I discussed some of the from a standpoint of looking at countries who are most likely going to give Klaus and Bigglesworth the middle finger. So I think you should start with that. But then you need to ask yourself if they're able to execute their plan. And that's a big if. There are no certainties. There are only probabilities. So, but if they are able to execute this in Europe and in the United States and Canada and Australia and New Zealand, what does that do to the economy? And most likely it would be inflationary, because they're going to have to, it would be a lot of supply being destroyed. And I'm not saying it's definitely inflation would happen, but there would be a strong, strong tailwind for inflation. And they're going to have to do MMT. They'd have to do a lot of things if they want to execute that plan that would lend themselves to higher consumer prices and, unfortunately, a lower standard of living. Because, again, it's not the money that has value. It's not the gold. It's not the Bitcoin. It's not the green pieces of paper. It's the goods and services. And so if they're destroying the amount of goods and services in an economy, by definition, they're making it less wealthy, regardless of how much your bank account says that you have, or what the market is telling you your asset is worth, denominated in those green pieces of paper, whatever color the paper is in your neck of the woods. So that's kind of how I'd start to think about it. I'd start thinking, okay, probably inflationary, but it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to have it for sure. And then what countries are not going to go along with the whole agenda, most likely. And by the way, I did a 20 or 30 minute video with Chris McIntosh specifically on that topic. And we're going to be using it to as an email. I don't know what you call it, but you know, where you get the free video and you give me your email address. That's how I induce you to give me your email. I'm like Klaus. That's my agenda, is to get your email address. you can either laugh or cry, right, guys? You gotta laugh at this stuff. But that's we're doing one of those things, my marketing guys. So just check out my website probably in the next 2 or 3 weeks, and you can get that video free. What happens with the resolution of the deposit guarantee scheme in case of bank failure, since the bank is insolvent? Well, I assume you're referring to the FDIC, in which case, well, I'll just assume that. they're insuring like $10 trillion worth of deposits with about $100 billion in assets. So my point is that they can't. People look at the FDIC as though it's this be all end all, and it's not. They can be insolvent. So, but then of course the argument is very powerful that the government would just come in and bail them out and just print the bank reserves necessary to bail out the FDIC. So that's what would most likely happen. And if you're losing sleep over it, Jan, just keep your dry powder in short-term T-bills. That's what we always talk about. We, meaning myself, Lynn, and Chris in Rebel Capitalist Pro. Yeah, that's Atlas. That's a good question. No real estate allocation in Chris Cole's Dragon portfolio. Thoughts? I heard Chris talk about real estate a couple times. I can't recall which podcast it was. I wish I could remember. I'd let you know. Nah, I can't remember what it was. But yeah, it's not part of it. I don't think that would prevent me from buying real estate. I don't think it would prevent me from trying to build or construct the Dragon portfolio. I would just do it with, you know, you just have two portfolios, let's say. You got a portfolio of real estate and a portfolio that's kind of a dragon-ish, if that's a word. yeah, that's kind of what I'm frustrated. I can't think of the name of that, or can't remember which episode or which podcast that was on. Maybe if you Google it, like Chris Cole Real Estate, it might pop up there. How much would I value a Paraguayan passport? I think it'd be great. I think it's awesome to have multiple passports regardless. I mean, what's your downside? Even if it's not a great passport from the standpoint of visa-free travel, why not own it? as far as the real estate in Paraguay, I've never looked at it. So I don't know. I wouldn't have any real insights there. Do I think anything will change with Biden? I mean, yeah, I mean, we're in a time right now of significant change. But if you're asking me any change from Trump or Biden, maybe on the edges, yeah. But let's be honest, the Democrats and the Republicans right now are they're pretty much the same group. Just they disagree on a couple things here and there, but they all want to print money and they all want to increase the size of government. So it's just to what degree. And once you print the money, once you blow out the deficit, where do you allocate the funds? That's really the only difference between them. So in my opinion, they're the same because they both want big government. They both want to just spend money like a drunken sailor. As far as the EU being better positioned than the United States, maybe, but again, not significantly. I think when you start comparing the EU or the US, I would compare Brazil to the US. I would compare Russia to the EU. I would make those comparisons. I think you're just, it's kind of tomato, tomato when you're looking at the EU or the US. Keep in mind though, I am a macro guy at heart. You know, I don't really get into the minutia too much. Wow. What advice should I give my elderly parents for what's coming? Tom, I would just say you got to own some gold and silver. I wouldn't allocate more than the 10% to gold and then, you know, part of my 10% to the speculative side of my portfolio to silver or the miners. I would also suggest they own a little Bitcoin. Again, let's not join the cult of Bitcoin, but I think you've got to look at asset classes that are outside of the system that don't have counterparty risk. And I don't know of any better than gold and Bitcoin. So I would start there. And then right now there's some great dividend producing stocks that would most likely benefit from an inflationary environment. And and in the energy space, copper, if you could get a good copper producer that throws off a dividend, because I think copper would do well in an inflationary environment. I think copper would do well in an environment where the governments are trying to push green energy. Not going to debate whether that's good or bad. It's just, it's going to require a lot of copper. So if you can get a good copper producer at a fair price that's paying you to own it, preferably a cheap price, but that's paying you to own it, that may be interesting. And I would also suggest they have, if they have a mortgage, just make sure that it's a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. They're short in the dollar, and that's kind of their dollar short. And if they got a rental property that pays them to own it, while at the same time you've got that 30-year fixed rate mortgage on it, so you're getting paid to short the dollar, you got a positive carry on the trade, I like that even better. Obviously real estate's in a bubble right now, so you got to be very, very, very careful, very, very careful of the underlying asset that you're owning to get to the cheap debt and the cash flow. I had this conversation with Kiyosaki the other day where we were at dinner. I was at dinner with Robert and his wife and Mark Moss. And we were talking about how now it's the debt in most people's mind was the liability. Robert would argue that it's not, but in most people's mind, the debt was always the liability and the property was the asset. Now we're in an environment where it's almost the opposite. The asset is like the liability, the property, and the debt is actually the asset. It's weird. It's just kind of a shift in thinking that I was going over with Kiyosaki. So that's I think what I would tell my own mother to do, Tom. So that's probably the best advice I can give you. All right. Yeah, we still got about 10 minutes or so. So we got time for some more questions. Let me go to the bottom of the chat stream. This is where the question of the year from Good Living. How will you travel around without the vaccine the airline now starts to demand? I mean, who knows? Who knows what you do? But I think it's a question we all need to start asking ourselves. And you could be someone that doesn't care about the vaccine, and that's great. No problem. Make your own decision. It's fine. I'm not saying the vaccine's good or bad, or I'm not here to debate that at all. What I am here to think through, though, is if you have a government or that's forcing you to do X, or you can't go to the gym, you can't go to the grocery store, you can't get on a plane, you can't travel, you can't go to sporting events, you can't go to church, you can't go to any type of fill in the blank. So basically you turn into, your only option is just to be a hobbit somewhere, be like Grizzly Adams living up in the mountains. What do you do? What do you do? And what if it's not a vaccine? What if it's a chip? And I don't want to go too far down the conspiracy path, but if you look at what Klaus is talking about, and you look at what they're talking about with the World Economic Forum, is it too much of a stretch to think that at some point in time, the government would, let's say, encourage, to put it mildly, the population to just put a little chip right there? In fact, I think that a lot of people would demand it. A lot of people would think that was awesome. What a great idea. You'll notice that, especially it becomes blatantly apparent when we're dealing with what we're dealing with in 2020 with the cerveza sickness, that a large portion of our population has no fear of tyranny whatsoever, none, to the point where a lot of our population is demanding that tyranny be thrust upon them by the government. They're going to the government and begging to be locked in their house. They're going to the government and begging them to force them to wear a mask. They're begging them to not allow them to take a walk on the beach. So is it a stretch to assume that same group that's, I don't know if they're getting bigger or smaller, who knows, but that same group would demand that the government put a chip in their arm. They say, government, put that chip in my arm now because you need to protect me. I don't care about freedom. I care about safety. And if this chip is going to make me safer, obviously in their eyes, then I want you, government, to put that chip in my arm immediately. I don't know. I don't think it's that much of a stretch. Whether you're in favor of vaccines or not, that doesn't, you know, whatever. That's not really the debate. The debate is, at some point in time in the future, maybe in the near future, the government is most likely going to want you to do something that you don't want to do, and the price you're going to have to pay will be significant for, let's call it, rebellion. And we need to think that through, and I try to have a plan B, because there's no, whether it comes to fruition or not, again, no certainties, only probabilities, but the probability is more than zero that happens. So why not have a plan B? What's the downside? What is your last stand on real estate? Well, we kind of touched on it, so yeah, maybe I'll do another question. But yeah, just quickly, Juan, I think that the United States, I'm assuming you're referring to, it's in a bubble, but I like the debt. I like the 30-year fixed rate mortgage. So if you can find a motivated seller and you find the right property, I'd pull the trigger. But you got to be very, you have to understand you're buying into a bubble, and therefore proceed with maximum caution. Oh, there you go. Okay, we'll end on this one. Great question. What do you think Janet Yellen being the next Secretary of the Treasury, and or what do I think about that, and what are the possible implications? So I haven't heard anybody talk about this, which I'm kind of shocked by. Maybe I just haven't been paying attention because I was too busy, drinking beers and doing tequila shots, watching the Tyson fight last night. I haven't been paying any attention. No, I haven't heard anyone talk about it. Think this through. You just hired a former Fed chair to be the Treasury. What is the main component of MMT? It's where you combine the balance sheet of the Fed and the Treasury, or you combine the two balance sheets together. That's like the first component of MMT. How is no one talking about this? It's like, what are we doing here? And what needs to happen in order for people to like, well, that's going on. Oh, I see. I get it now. I mean, do we have to hire Kelton as the Fed chair? And then maybe people start connecting the dots. I don't know. CNBC probably still wouldn't figure it out. But that's the big takeaway, is that when I see Janet Yellen, that's the first thing that comes to my mind, is MMT. And not to imply that she's has been a proponent of that in the past. I don't know. Maybe she has. Maybe she hasn't. But I think if I was trying to come up with a plan to merge the balance sheets so I could start turning bank reserves into legal tender, I would hire a former Fed chair to run the Treasury. First thing I'd do. So we'll go ahead and end it there. I think that gives you guys a lot to think about for the evening. And definitely check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. I'll pitch that one more time. For those of you who didn't hear it at the beginning, that's the investment online forum. It's amazing, with Lynn Alden, with Chris McIntosh. It's tons of research and live streams just like this with our members. You guys will absolutely love it. So go to George Camp, can't say my own stupid name, georgegammon.com/pro, and check it out. There's a $1 trial. You can test it out for a week and see how you like it. And let me give shout outs to everybody. Oh, geez, we had 1,500 people. Wow. Thanks for hanging out today, guys. I appreciate it. Let me give some shout outs to everyone here at the bottom of the chat. Oh, Masa, what's up, buddy? We'll see you in about an hour over in the member stream. Oh, Pratic, thank you for the super sticker. Oh, we got a lot of those super stickers. Thank you for all the people who did that. I don't often, I just get so caught up in the live stream, I don't pay any attention to them, and I apologize. Thank you very much. We appreciate the support for the channel, for sure. So Mark, Top Feed, Wilmar, Arius, Alexander, Atlas, Nicholas, Easy B, the Intelligent CPA, Joe G's Craft Cannabis Guides, Willow, Wick Bob, Jackie, Mark, Catherine, Dwayne, Ran, Isaac, Royal Wolf, Things on Dashboard, Shoes, 123, Brady, Jackie, Good Living, Seymour, Karen, Sandra, Miniature Chicken Channel. I got to check that out. Lily, Elizabeth, Paul, you guys are awesome. Thanks for hanging out with me, and I will see you on the next video.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.